warning, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, on the corner of, can you believe it, Trashview and Nava Vista, altering your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves, warming your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Daryl? Can you feel it? Is it working? Yes, this is a Daryl Becker Freedom Fiends show, doing it solo right now. And I gotta say, I am blessed to both have this opportunity just to be on this show. You know, like, I was once someone out there, I would say 6 years ago, just listening to the Freedom Fiends, just, you know, saying, hey, this is a cool little up-and-coming show. I liked how the playing back and forth between the original co-host, that's Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati, and that was a great beginning point, you know, and then over a span of years, I watched it grow to include all these other co-hosts, and the general theme of this show is promoting the ideas of freedom. And sometimes the word liberty comes out as a synonym for freedom. And I wanted to really just take a moment to unpack some of this and my own history for why is this even important to me? Why am I on this show? Me. Somehow I was able to demonstrate to Michael Dean that I had the chops to go ahead and be able to talk and hold forth and listen and not do too much naughty stuff regarding cussing and things like that. And so far, I got all of my cussing out ahead of time. And I moved here to the Big Island of Hawaii I would say like 9.5 years ago. And suddenly I had high-speed internet like I did not have in Vermont beforehand. I suddenly was able to research things and figure things out. And see, I moved over there. When I was over there in Vermont, I was thinking in terms of freedom. Okay, I'm going to get the right representatives into office. Local representatives in the government. I actually got to know these guys. I mean, these guys would come around and knock on the door, actually. And there were actually town meetings. That's where decisions were made on to exactly how high Vermont taxes would be. By the way, spoiler alert, they're absurdly high in some towns in Vermont. It's not good, okay? That was not good at all. Unlike the nearby state of New Hampshire, where I think they have some small degree of more reasonableness, at least with no income tax. So I literally came from a place that had repressed freedom, and then I moved to a place with, honestly, other types of repressed freedom. The state of Hawaii has a lot of legislations and regulations that really limit freedom. So now I'm going to unpack that first part of the show title, freedom. Just wanted to say, for me, freedom is contingent on boundaries, ownership, and property. Really, I just can't even speak of freedom without touching on those three. See, without knowing the boundaries around you and within you, and the ownership, who owns what? Like, who's owning your attention span to listen to me right now? Hopefully, that's you. And then, that third part, property. Whose property is this? Well, I mean, I'm speaking into a microphone that is my own property. I didn't even get this one as a loaner. This is absolutely my own microphone. And all the other equipment in front of me is also my own. But there is a boundary. In other words, I was invited onto this show. So I don't think I own this show. I don't think I can just speak about anything on this show. I have to basically stay within some degree of the format and not say any naughty, I would say challenging, potential legal disputes kind of things. Boundaries, ownership, and property, that defines freedom for me. So when you know that you own your own body, you own your own space and time, like the geography around you, like you're basically choosing to listen, you're basically choosing to be out there right now. I don't know, maybe this is the day after or the week after, and you're one of those Liberty Radio Network listeners, and you're choosing to listen. You're choosing because you actually own something. You have a property on something, and that's basically the contingency of freedom. Now, all the people out there who separately own items, as long as they know the boundaries around those items, there's no conflict. And to me, that's what I mean by freedom. I mean a limited amount of conflict and a maximizing of choice and opportunity. You know, basically choice being you do what you want with what is yours, boundaries, ownership, and property again. So just unpacking that little tidbit right there, I wanted to go ahead and do that. And that's the kind of thing where I'm hoping that you like this idea, but if you don't like that idea, you're listening to the wrong show, basically. I gotta say, I miss my co-hosts. I miss my co-host. Normally, it's frequently just Michael. I miss having like a third co-host for the Monday show, or I call it Monday because here in Hawaii it's Monday. Over there in some places it's very, very much Tuesday. So I'm just saying it like it is. Like right now it is after 8 o'clock on specifically on, for me, Monday evening. And I give up this slot in my night just to donate my time in the show, because I think this is important to get out messages. I think it's really excellent what I see Michael's done over this time, which reminds me, he gets this kind of show done because he actually has people who have products that he advertises for. And indeed, one of them is Cell411, and I never made an agreement tonight to have to promote this awesome app on cell phones, Android and iPhone. Cell411, it's a pretty cool, easy to get and easy to look for, but I'm just going to make mention of it right now and say, hey, I did my due diligence. I am keeping this in mind. And now I want to get to the subject at hand. And now that you guys all, if you've listened, and hopefully you have some functioning ability to remember what I said freedom is a function of knowing who owns what, boundaries, ownership, and property. And I would say it's more like a reduction of conflict creates more opportunity. And that, to me, opportunity is what I think of when I think of freedom. I think of, what do I want to do? Do I want to spend my time this way? Do I want to work at this job, or do I want to build my own businesses? Again, spoiler, I chose to build my own businesses. I mean, honestly, working for other people, you can definitely rake in a lot of dollars, but there's going to be a serious cost in time. I prefer to spend my time with the people, pardon me, with the people I really, really prefer. I really like enjoy my time and company with. So that's, for me, part of freedom is I've limited down the number of people who are challenging, who cause lots of friction because they have blurry boundaries. They have boundaries issues. They don't really spend the time to know and recognize who owns what regarding attention span, regarding what's actually going on, basically. Like, is anyone actually want to listen to what they're talking about? You see, right now, you, the listener, if you and I were talking right now, I would be tracking your facial expressions. I'd be saying things and waiting for you to see what you respond. And I'd be picking my choices right for that right now. I'm like that. I like to track. Well, I've made the choice to reduce down in my personal unpaid life the number of people who lack that skill. The skill of tracking the audience, which we're going to talk about later on. This is part of critical thinking and critical applications of the critical thinking, is knowing what the audience is basically essentially thinking. So yeah, that's a spoiler for later in the show tonight, because I've got my fat page of notes for the show. But I'm glad to have taken some time to unpack some things for you. I'm glad you guys are out there and that you consistently keep listening to the show. I just really, really am grateful that, you know, that's what happens out there. So here's the first thing on my page of notes. First person plural pronouns. That's we. And I'm going to take a moment because I'm seeing how much I've already covered and what I really want to touch on. How can I feel free and have lots of choice if I'm saying we and us and our about things that are out of my control? I got to unpack that for you. How can I feel like I've got lots of choices if I feel in any way morally or even legally culpable for the actions of others by including them in a we or us or our, like we're over there fighting with our troops for our oil? And that's expressions I've heard years ago, and I think some people are like still talking about that. We went to the moon. We did this. We did that. We won the Super Bowl. You know, like that. So this is one of those things where I've chosen to increase my freedom. I've personally reduced the number of people who, in my unpaid life, use those first-person plural pronouns of we, us, and our, describing the actions and choices of others that you have absolutely no control over. It seems very disempowering, especially if it's something that could imply guilt or punishment, such as reparations for the crimes of, I would say, a small minority, historically speaking. There's a minority of people in the, say, distant past who imported slaves to the New World. By the way, that whole slave trade thing, there's a lot to unpack there, such as who were the people in the inner African continent who were selling those slaves to the traders on the shores, by the way. Because those traders did not go into the continent to get slaves. No, no, no. That would have been tragically dangerous for them. No, they actually showed up to ports where the Africans right there were very willing to sell other Africans, because that has been part of the multi-century history of Africa. Go ahead and look this stuff up. And by the way, you know, if I'm wrong, please go ahead and send some angry emails to the Freedom Fiends. I know that you could find freedomfiends.com and look that up. So what I'm saying is, there's a sense of empowerment for me when I no longer would ever say the words we, us, and our about anyone or any things or actions, unless it really was including me in a practical way. My votes didn't change things. I don't think I have enough evidence to show that my votes did anything. These alleged representatives, I'm pretty sure they're not doing my bidding. And I could tell you for sure, the military and financial powers of this world, they're not checking in on Daryl Becker to see what they're going to do next. They're actually very much, you know, I'm pretty sure, taking things into their own hands. And there's just a play as if it all is for, you know, I think it's basically just to control everyone listening right now to think that you have some control over the situation when you really don't. So coming up on that first break, I'm just saying, I have a chip on my shoulder whenever I hear someone say we about stuff that's not theirs. I think that's really important, and if you're really still doing that, I invite you, try to go a week without saying we. Try to change your language, and when we come back, what I'm going to try to do is help you understand why do you speak like everyone else does in the first place? Because I got a theory about that.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no first-hand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth Justice American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth Justice American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth Justice American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth Justice American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
Freedom Fiends is back. Daryl Fiends this time. So it's kind of a relief to be back in front of the microphone alone. It's like back in the days when I actually was a professor, actually teaching in front of a class, except for this time no one's there is going to ask me any questions. No one gets to interrupt me. There's no call-ins like Free Talk Live or certain other shows that allow for that kind of thing. And in the first part, you know, I touched on what freedom was. I touched on elements of what gets in the way of freedom, and that's part of it is the language that you use in your mind, and that is certainly going to happen when it comes out of one's mouth. You know, I've been changing some of my language to include more I statements because it definitely helps. I mean, it helps to reduce friction between me and others when I speak more about me and less about, you know, when you happen to say we, us, and our, I could say, you know, when I say we, us, and our, I pretty much at this point in my life, I'm only going to be referring to only to people that I'm actually connected to and some type of tangible connection, I mean, either chosen or, say, in the case of, like, citizenship, perforce, you know, because of, popping out of some type of biological being born kind of thing at a certain geographic location equals now you're culpable for whatever and now you're subject to whatever rules and laws and that kind of thing. Temporarily protected by the umbrella, allegedly, of one's parents. But, you know, to me, that seems pretty coercive. That's not really like a choice. So I don't choose to say, oh, yeah, I'm a U.S. citizen. It's like, yeah, I have U.S. citizenship papers, you know. It's a gang that I was jumped into by virtue of being born here. I have no, I would say, collectivist style type of pride in the accomplishments of others or guilt in the crimes of others. I don't have either of that. I can only pretty much have pride in my own accomplishments, and I can only answer to myself for my own, I would say, shortcomings, you know. So whenever I'm hearing people go off on, you know, we're over there, or, you know, look what we've done. We sent a car up out into outer space. It's like, no, hold a second. Are you part of that rocket team? Because unless you're part of that team that allegedly sent that car out into space, I don't think you're part of that we. So why would you out there, you we, us, our user in language, why would you be doing that? Because I'm not doing that. And this is why I'm using you language and not we. It's very confrontational, see? I'm pointing something out in you. Why do you say we and us and our about stuff that's not yours? I'll tell you why. Because you want to sound like everyone else, unconsciously. I don't think you planned this. But here's what happens. Here are the perks for sounding like everyone else, okay? It's really very simple. When you say the same types of phrases that everyone else says, we went to the moon, etc., etc., all those kinds of we statements, we're over there, we've got military bases in 700 locations across the world. You know, what you're doing is you're sounding like everyone else, and the perks include you get the job potentially because you are saying something that's identifying to the other person. They're saying the same we, us, our statements, and you're saying them, so you can get that. You could get in with the right people. You could maybe get the right girlfriend if you're a guy. I think if you're a girl, you don't really have to, it doesn't even matter what you say. You could just show up, basically, you know, unless something's really wrong with you, you can just basically show up and get at least some guy, maybe not any guy, but, you know, that's the stigmata that is frequent across the first world when it comes to being certain things. I guess I'm making generalizations. Uh-oh. I'm getting a little warning sign. So I'm just saying that this is what happens out there. There are potential problems when you don't speak like everyone else. And so here's what happened. I chose to not speak like everyone else. I don't want to say the same phrases exactly the same way. I'm not going to speak using these terms. So I'm going to touch on this in the next segment coming up, but I'll just give a little teaser for it. It's the language of urgency. It's whenever you hear someone saying should, must, ought to, need to, got to, have to. That's the language of urgency. And it comes out in people because usually there's some type of need for, I guess it's like a strong desire to get something happening right away. We need to vote for Bernie Sanders, you know, that kind of thing. Or we need to stop global warming. You know, this is the shoulds that keep popping up. And there's a statement, by the way, just to go back to the we thing before we close the segment. It's, you got a mouse in your pocket? It's called mouse pocketing because there's no we unless you have an actual little mouse in your pocket over there. We'll be back. We're going to unpack much more of this. And Yeah, I'm really, really glad to be here.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
You know you want to be a filmmaker. As Rick of Rick and Morty says, school's not a place for smart people. Nowhere is this more true than film school. Don't waste years and $100,000 being taught by those who couldn't make it. Just get a camera and a $7 Kindle version of $30 Film School 3rd Edition. $30 Film School 3rd Edition is the recent update on the classic 2003 book that helped spark the do-it-yourself filmmaking revolution. Written by DIY filmmaker Michael W. Dean, whose high-quality, low-budget movies star Academy Award winners and nominees, get worldwide distribution, and have been in many respected film festivals. The first two editions sold over 100,000 copies, and it's recommended reading in many colleges. The book is back, updated for today's high-def consumer cameras, but still has the same self-starter ethic and tips that no other book has. Get it delivered this minute to your Kindle or phone for only $7. Go to Amazon and type in $30 Film School 3rd Edition. That's $30 Film School 3rd Edition.
Yeah. Freedom Fiends. You know, if I was a real dedicated Fiend listener, I'd even know, like, oh yeah, we're just listening to the right arm of Wyoming or something like that. And I don't even know if that's true or not, but I gotta say, I gotta hand it to Michael for being able to do everything, like help to create Fiend Phone, a way to avoid needing a Comrex to get onto radio stations, not to mention, you know, I would say excellent digital person-to-person talking. And Bipcoin, B-I-P coin, Bravo India Papa coin, he helped to launch that. And that asset, which, by the way, is on sale right now, is out there. It's actually on Cryptopia. That's a New Zealand cryptocurrency exchange. And we're going to touch on instruments of freedom in the future, coming up later in the show. Maybe in this segment, maybe I'll touch on it. But a moment ago in the last segment before we had to listen to, before we chose to listen to all of these excellent sponsors for this show, it was about the language of urgency, about should, must, and ought to, and why do people choose to talk in the same way as everyone else talks, and not alter their language when it's obviously disempowering? Like to say, we owe those people reparations, and we're all destroying the planet. Oh, because, again, like I said, you know, it's kind of like where to draw the line on which type of animal is a meat food and which type of animal is a pet. It all depends on, you know, that line. There's a meme that's going around, and it's showing the line that's right there next to horses, and then on the other side of horses you have the actual chickens, pigs, sheep, cows kind of thing. And then there's another line right past the cows that's all the way, like, basically meaning that you're including all animals, not to eat them. And that's when you want to get with a specific hot vegan girl. So the point is, if you speak like everyone else and you conform, and we're going to get into conformity in a while, then you have opportunities to get with other people who also conform, because that was one of the crucial lessons in government schools, and that's a key component. So I will get to the 7-lesson school teacher by John Taylor Gatto. That's like a little teaser coming up. I will get to some of the tools of freedom, basically what's going to actually increase freedom, since I'm touching on something that will decrease freedom, which is keeping the same language as everyone else and not changing it, saying we about accomplishments or crimes that are not yours, and for that matter, using should, must, and ought to when there's no fire. Is there really an urgency? And also, are you saying that someone else should do something? Well, you don't own someone else, usually. I mean, unless you actually are living in one of those places in the world where they have slaves. And there are places like that, you know. That's real out there. Can go back to the African subject and even parts of Asia. You know, that type of slavery is real. But it's kind of driven less, it's definitely less in the news and that kind of thing. So What I'm generally saying is to speak in these terms of urgency when there is no urgency, to say should what about someone else when they're not in your control and you don't own them. So you're basically going against the ideas of freedom that I was bringing up in the first segment of the show. Why are you speaking about other people and what they should do? They're going to choose to do what they want to do. Do you own them? No. Well, how about move on and start with step one? Get your own life and house in order. And then you can consider going a little bit further and maybe think about helping your neighbors if you want to, the neighbors that you specifically choose to interact with. And then think further in terms of your community. And I bet if you're like me, you probably won't go too much further than that. Now, here's how far I'm going to go. I'm going to send messages out there like this, out to Alpha Centauri and beyond, to try to help encourage the reevaluation of language. And I don't know that I'm going to touch on it in this segment, but I will certainly touch on it later in the show, how this came to be. Where did these lessons happen? But before I even get to how this occurred, this shift in language to be so disempowering, because I have a suspicion that if I was reading books from, say, several centuries ago, I'm looking at right in front of me Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift. And in case you didn't look this book up, by the way, this happens to go back to the 1700s. That was written around then. It was one of the most widely read books of that time. And I have a suspicion that there would be a bit less of that we, us, and our talk about crimes, certainly, and accomplishments done by others. And it would be a bit more focused into the now. Why? Because back then there was not as much compulsory schooling, where basically children are sent to these places to learn to speak in the same types of ways, to say the same types of things. So here, I'm going to give you a trick right now. This is for this segment. I'm going to give you four different ways to really mess up the connection you have with another human being. And then I'm going to tell you how the flip side of what to do in case it comes from them to you and soften the impact. Okay. If you really want to mess up your relationship with someone, start with making demands of them. That's the first D. That's really very easy. You just make some demands. Just make some commands of them to change their behavior or implement new behavior that they are reluctant or very resistant to do. And here's what you can do in case a demand is coming at you. Obviously, you can take a moment to understand that, wow, this person's got some urgency. Why are they so demanding? What's the fire? Where's the urgency? And you can see that if it's coming out of left field, if there really is no urgency, they certainly have no claim over you and your activities, well, then you can choose to make a boundary and say, I'm not really in the space to receive commands from you, but I can hear that as a request, and I can hear that you have some urgency about that. But did you pay my retainer? Because I don't remember being paid a retainer to work for you right now. So your command or demand, basically, I understand how to translate that in my mind as a request for something. There's something that you want, and I could choose whether or not to give it to you. That's my choice. That's my ownership of me. And that's the first way to take it in, basically to say, oh, they want something, and you can choose whether to give it to them or not, you know, depending on what works for you. And also to understand that for some reason they have urgency, or they just simply are kind of crappy at tracking their audience and seeing how interested you are in whatever you're saying or doing, or whatever they are saying and doing. So here's the second way to mess it up with someone. You can give them labels and names. Start calling them various, you know, labels, basically. Compliments or insults, both of these count. Watch it happen. It's weird. This is the second D. It's called unrequested diagnoses. Now, diagnoses on its own, that's cool. Like, I work basically as a medical professional, licensed acupuncturist, taking in clients, etc. And there are people who show up and they want a diagnosis because they want a treatment plan to go with the diagnosis. And the proof of the diagnosis being somewhat accurate is results. Or at least that's what proof constitutes for many clients. For me, it's just correlation. I don't ever claim proof that I cause things. I just work to help, basically. But the end of it is that unrequested diagnoses, very simply, okay, that's just like giving labels, like I would say, you know, what were they called? Quack or, you know, fake healthcare provider. There could be all types of labels when someone hears the term acupuncturist. What would be the other terms? Clumsy DJ, you know, not effective as a freedom fiend. There could be labels and adjectives like that. And that can happen. And here's what I would choose to do if it's coming at me. If labels are coming at me, I'm choosing to change that for a second in my head. Not to say anything about it, but just to say, oh, they're putting labels on me because they want understanding. They label themselves and me and everyone and the world and everything because that's how they put labels on things. Simplistic labels. Like, who are those people over there? And those are protesters. And that's just a simple label. Obviously, those people are not full-time protesters, probably. They're just people, and they happen to be protesting something. So saying that they're, you know, giving them a label just gives quick identity, but it's simplistic. So it's the giving of simplistic labels is really like a way to make a barrier between you and someone else. Watch how people get weird when you give them a compliment. You did a great show. Thanks. I mean, you did a really great show, Daryl. Be like, thanks, I think. You know, it's like that. It's the same thing with insults. And I use the time in my head, which just takes milliseconds for me to translate it as, they're labeling, they want understanding, okay. And that makes them a human in my mind, and then I can move on. Then I can see if they do one of the next D's, which is denial, no. Deserve-oriented language. That's entitlement speak. That's saying, thinking in terms of punishments and rewards. It's known as sour grapes for some people out there who know that expression. Punishments and rewards, it's basically thinking, you know, you were driving, do you know how fast you were driving, Mr. Becker? It's like, yes, I know, I was driving 45 miles per hour in a 35 mile per hour zone on this road where I happen to live near, you know, right here. And that can happen, basically, thinking a deserving a punishment, like a speeding ticket, or, in some cases, deserving the reward of praise and that type of thing, which goes right back into a diagnosis. So when I hear that type of deserve-oriented language, we all deserve free healthcare. We all deserve a basic minimum income, that kind of thing. That type of entitlement thinking and entitlement speak, it really gets in the way. I'll tell you. And that final D, since I know I got the time, that's denial of responsibility, denying that you're responsible for something, for, say, feeling angry. You made me angry, so I had to start yelling at you, that kind of thing. So I translate deserve-oriented language as some type of desire for an idea of justice and equality frequently. And I translate denial of responsibility as kind of like a childlike desire for ease and efficiency, because it'd be so much easier if a person can just deny that they're responsible for the cause and effect of their choice of actions, or for even their internal terrain, like getting angry, or their thoughts. So, you know, keep this stuff in mind, please. Or if you want to be like most people, just forget I said any of this because you want to talk like everyone else because it happens to get you the job and the lady that you want. Trust me, I understand. I did it for too many years. So when we come back, we'll touch on some news.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Freedom Bees back. Aficionados of Freedom Fiends, big shout out to some of my favorite fiends out there. That would be Lusander Fiend, our dear, sweet, gentle Yak Emperor, Nick Hazelton. Definitely to Jeremy, Murder Dog himself, is excellent, talented. Of course, Michael Dean. And the Fiendly Departed, those who I've done shows with, and I'm not going to mention their names. So now we're back, touching on things, just tying up the whole show thing together. First, I touched on freedom definitions, you know, a little given idea. I touched on language, and if you heard what I said about language, and if you actually chose to remember it, and if you were honest in your self-assessment, I think you might actually see where probably you might be, I don't know, pretty programmed and conformist in speaking and saying the same types of phrases of "we need to, we must," and "it's we, us, and our," and all that kind of thing, and the mouse pocketing thing. Now, I am psyched, by the way, my co-hosts, since, you know, they've got a term, mouse pocketing. You got a mouse in your pocket? You know, this is, you know, for why you're saying "we," basically. "We need to do something about global warming." It, you know, maybe you want to, but I'm going to do what I want to do, basically. So now I'm about to unpack some freedom tools. And, you know, when I wrote this down for show notes tonight, I was thinking, freedom tools. And the first thing that pops up, of course, is cryptocurrency. The Bitcoin is the cryptocurrency that you might know, you, dear listener, if that's the only thing you ever know is, "Yeah, I've heard of Bitcoin, but I don't even know what it is." Okay, 9 years ago, a technology was unveiled and released and then replicated and spread, decentralized across computers across this whole world, that revolutionized basically information and value transfer. And that's money, by the way. Because when you can suddenly transfer money and have no third party be really too affected and make these movements of money and value happen really rapidly, that's what cryptocurrency does. If you're just near a computer, which would probably be your phone that you might even be listening to right now from this show right now, I know that you can look up Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. I know that you could choose to remain purposefully, willfully ignorant. You can ignore that subject. Or maybe you're one of those guys out there like myself, and you make a good living with cryptocurrencies, that you've been aware of it since its inception, but maybe, like me, you got into it, unfortunately, a little too late, so you didn't really make a lot of money with it. Well, it's out there. Cryptocurrencies are one of those tools out there, just based on the four principles that I'm not going to go into, but anyway, it's a freedom tool. Similar to the freedom tool of knowing how you're using your language and what are you doing about it. So, you know, I listed several other things, such as removing people from your unpaid life that you don't need to spend time with. I have really enjoyed that process. But at the same time, keep in mind, I make my living with clients. So in my paid life, I choose to. They see the urgency. I choose to have, like, the biggest, the most powerful, effective skill to deal with all kinds of people for the purpose of helping them, which includes not being frustrated or irritated by them. So I need to know how to do that, how to not be irritated by people. And I chose to learn specific technologies and methods that reduce my frustration with people. However, in my paid life with clients, I know when the client's going to show up, because we have a schedule, and I kind of know when they're leaving because we have a schedule for that too. And if they communicate to me in between those two scheduled times, well, I'm going to respond back, and then I'm not going to think about it much. If I do keep thinking about them, if I keep thinking irritated thoughts like, "Oh man, I really hate this client. They just really are the worst." If I had such affirmations going on in my head, I can say that that would get in the way of focusing and trying to get the job done. And also, after they're gone, if I still kept thinking like that, that would get in my way. So when we get back, I'm going to go into some of the awesomeness of cryptocurrency with some news coming from Arizona. You know, this is one of those times where you hear that lead out music playing and thinking, how many seconds does this last? What I'm saying is, we're going to be back and touch on some of the things going on in Arizona regarding how they're taking cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin and Litecoin for their property taxes and other tax payments. Interesting. We'll see where that leads to. Worms to you, good people.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fiction.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent, post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kinda deep, but always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback, and for the first time, on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. And of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low-orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LIBHAR 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Please insert the purple wire into your cortex now. Freedom Fiends is governed by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Yeah. It's great to do a Freedom Fiends solo show. Definitely my first. Been like multiple months on this awesome podcast, and definitely it's a radio show. It's a radio show. But, you know, I say podcast because I love podcasts. I don't care that, you know, I'm really impressed by anyone that can get a show that's on a radio station. That's just quite a feat nowadays. But nowadays, I mean, I get my information out there from podcasts in large ways. And honestly, I think I was going to go back into what I was speaking completely about in that first segment was all about components of, you know, defining freedom, elements that would say take away choice, which includes language and like the ill use of language, problems with not doing it, and now the tools of freedom. And I was just teasing on that there's this thing that happened in Arizona where all of a sudden, here, I'm going to open this little thinger right here. So the Arizona Senate has recently passed a bill that could potentially allow residents to pay their taxes with Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies that are, quote, recognized by Arizona state revenue authorities. So public records show that Senate Bill 1091, which aims to enable tax payment via cryptocurrencies, was introduced to the Senate on the 10th of January and was approved by the Senate Financial Committee on the 24th. On the 8th of February, the bill was passed with a 16-13 margin. While the bill is set to be reviewed by the state's House of Representatives, it has the potential to profoundly impact the state at which cryptocurrencies are adopted. At which cryptocurrencies are adopted and how they are perceived as a medium of value transfer. So it's mentioning freedom tools, okay? This is one of them. Okay, if anyone out there can remember 1994 and perhaps being a bit confused as to what exactly an email is and what is this internet or World Wide Web? What exactly can that do? How is this going to change anything? And perhaps at that point, you may not have been prescient enough, like far-seeing enough, to think maybe it's time to invest in every company that has any connection to computers and internet. You know, so if you were, you really were ahead of the curve. And that's kind of where Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are right now. Right now, I mention, hey, have you heard of cryptocurrencies to people? And they'll know. But then I mention, have you heard of the word Bitcoin? And I get word recognition. So it's kind of like when I was starting up as an acupuncturist in the 90s, and I would ask people if they'd heard of acupuncture. I have to tell you, thanks to movies and things like that, almost 9 out of 10 people, more than that even, frequently said yes. So this is in the news. This is everywhere. People are right now getting ready in Arizona, apparently, to pay their, I guess, to allegedly consider paying some of these threats that are imposed upon them, payment kind of things, aka taxes. But still, you know, I mean, if you happen to be crypto rich or you're mining a lot of Litecoin, and I would say it's an interesting thing. Like, you live in Arizona, you're mining Litecoin right there, and you're using some of that mined Litecoin to pay off the authorities. This is an age-old thing where you pay the gangsters in your region to not attack you. I mean, that's been going on for about 10,000 years since Jericho, if my memory serves me, according to the Bad Quaker podcast. But, you know, that's how long this kind of gangster state has been going on. So enlisting the tools of freedom, which I'm very enthusiastic about, I just want to focus for a moment on, it's really important to vote, more practically speaking, with your feet. Move to where you want, basically. That gives you the type of life and freedom that you want. So, for some things that I wanted, I really, really wanted, and I moved here to the Big Island of Hawaii. Now, I wasn't really thinking in terms of, like, solidly, you know, reshaping my life in a practical way. It just ended up that way as really beneficial. Otherwise, I would have moved back to Vermont, because Vermont is beautiful and wonderful. And there are great people over there. And, like I found out, even better people in New Hampshire. It's amazing there. And that's not too far away. But I found myself, honestly, well-connected here, with many tools of freedom that kept adding up. And so here's the first one that happened is, 8 years ago, I found an explicit and explainable, understandable method of critical thinking. Now, here's the thing right there. You can say you're a critical thinker. Are you a critical thinker? I'm a critical thinker. Okay. So fine. Could you please explain to me in, say, a few sentences? How about 3 sentences? What is your method of critical thinking? Hey, I'll even give you 10 sentences. And I don't mean run-on and big, huge compound ones. I mean, I want to please list to me the process of what you call critical thinking. And I love to hear people out because sometimes people aren't ready with it. Well, I am ready with an answer to that, what my critical thinking explicit methodology is. And it was introduced to me with a name called the Trivium Method of Critical Thinking. But since that time, I've learned that that's a very much more modern application of the word trivium. And it, you know, like a lot of words, it goes back into antiquity. But essentially, it starts like this. It's really very easy. My method out there, you guys listening, for critical thinking is I take in who, what, where, and when. I'm asking those questions and I'm answering them. I'm just taking in the data points, the data, the raw data. That's step one. It's called grammar work. You take in who, what, where, and when, and it's grammar and it's data. It's also called knowledge. And then I move to step two. This is kind of important. And step two is great because step two is understanding. It's asking why questions, asking and answering particular why questions. I do this in my head, by the way, or, you know, with some help and research if necessary. And that is called understanding. It's also called logic, okay, when properly done. And it does include the use of the informal logical fallacies out there. You can Google 42 informal logical fallacies. You can look up and understand these are components. Those are like a virus scanner for your mind. It can stop corrupted information from coming in and it can prevent corrupted information potentially from going out if you're using the filter properly. So that's the second step. And the third step is putting the practical applications of your knowledge and understanding, who, what, where, and when, grammar, plus why, that's logic or understanding, and that equals practical applications or wisdom, or if you want, it's also called rhetoric, which in the communications field, you know, we're talking grammar and then the dialectic or logic and then rhetoric, which includes tracking your audience and talking. So did that sound like a lecture to you? Did it sound like I've been up there before in front of a whiteboard? Because I have. You could have remembered what I said. It's easier if I am drawing it out for you, but who, what, where, and when, and why, and then how. Like, basically, I'm taking in my knowledge first and data, then I'm applying logic to it to try to figure it out, and like, thinking, how does it work theoretically? And then I need to see practical applications of both of those right then and there, or as soon as possible. And then I do an evaluation all over again. Well, here's how to mess up critical thinking. It's really very easy. You can start with why. You can start with the answers for claims, like why. Like, say, for example, global warming is being caused by man-made CO2. And that's like a conclusion. And now you'll go back to grammar. You can start to cherry-pick all the evidence that supports this. And you could even choose to ignore other evidence that would, say, be contrary to that, just as a saying. By the way, I'm not making a claim about global warming. I'm using it as an example, okay? So please, lighten up, okay? It's really very simple. So if I have a claim, like, that there is this problem caused by CO2 from humans, as if CO2 is a problem, okay? And then now there's evidence to support it. It's going backwards, basically. You're starting with an understanding or a claim, and now you're cherry-picking grammar, and then you pretend that there's a practical application to it, instead of actually really measuring everything like a scientist, empirically. You know, like, I need function. My critical thinking method says, in case I ever see this happen, people do this where they have a conclusion first, where they're going to use the logical fallacies to, say, dismiss some type of any evidence, to say, I won't look at that because it's connected to, say, the Ayn Rand Institute, and I hate Ayn Rand. And, you know, I mean, that's, of course, the logical fallacy of guilt by association, you know, which is irrelevant. In other words, the claim is considerably more relevant than the source of the claim. Source of the claim is interesting. The claim, how does it show up with evidence, basically? That's what it is. So when you don't have a way of thinking critically, if you're out there and if what I just said either was too fast for you, or it went over your head or whatever, or you couldn't, I mean, honestly, you could just go freedomfiends.com to the show that's put out right here, Fancy Thinker Show, whatever I'm going to call it, and you can go ahead and re-listen to it and take notes and do it again. If you have a critical thinking method that matches what I'm doing and it gives great results, basically, I'd like to hear about it. You know, I'm Daryl Becker. I'm sure you could find me on the internet because I'm a fiend. So, and also on Facebook. You know, and if you think that you just can wing it, you know, I don't think that technology works really well. So there's a lot of ways out there. Just I know I have the time to say once again, because I said this in the beginning of the last segment, another tool of freedom is Cell 411. This is an app that you can put on your phone. I've got it. I've got certain collections of people that I can very quickly and instantly connect to, called cells, private cells, little like neighborhood cells. That means that if I get my car breaks down or something similar like that happens, I can very rapidly send a message to specific people quickly and then go back to individually call for other types of help. It also lets you take video and still picture clips and send them to people. And in all honesty, in places where you actually have threats of real violence, sometimes Hawaii happens like that to be, unfortunately. Hawaii is consistently more violent than, statistically more violent than Vermont, where I came from, but that's a different story. Anyways, it's one of those kinds of freedom tools. So, you know, there's a reason why I'm so passionate about these things. Sometimes I think it's because I've suffered from thinking myself superior, because I could put one word in front of another without saying and ah all the time, and that makes me clever or something. But really, it comes down to this. I've made a great deal of mistakes that are very humbling in my life. And the things that I'm excited about, that you hear me all enthusiastic about, that's the kind of stuff that really have helped turn my life around. You know, to like live in the rental of my choice with the awesome woman of my choice and doing the life I want. this is really awesome over here. So, you know.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
I do love these intros. So Freedom Fiends is back, and I was out there just taking care of myself during the break, and then thinking, you know, what other freedom tools would I wish to share with you guys out there, you know, specifically? And I, like, right before the last break, I was going in to say, hey, this was very humbling. I'm very enthusiastic about these things because I definitely saw problems in my life in a lack of these things over decades. You know, I'm more than 40 years old. I have been through these problems for a long time. I've been through the problems of lacking critical thinking methods that I could explain to myself and use effectively, and then would remove fallacies, would remove problems of, say, the appeal to authority, starting from a conclusion, kind of broken critical thinking. It's backwards, basically. You start with a conclusion, cherry pick, etc. Using we and us and our language, you know, using the language of conformity. Where does this conformity come from? And so, luckily, even before I even got to Hawaii, when I was over there in Vermont, I was listening to a show called Unwelcome Guests, where you can find unwelcomeguests.net. And the entire book called The Underground History of American Education by John Taylor Gatto was read out loud. Basically, almost the entire book was, the entire book was put out there. And I listened to these things, and I was a young parent. I mean, meaning that Vermont. The end of my 20s and the beginnings of my 30s, and before I left Vermont, basically. And I was taking in the messages of this guy, John Taylor Gatto, because essentially it comes down to the damage to critical thinking, and where did it come from? So this guy, he pretty much pinned the nail on that specific head. So he wrote this specific article called The Seven Lesson School Teacher. And basically, you know, in a nutshell, this, by the way, John Taylor Gatto, New York State Teacher of the Year twice. He was New York City Teacher of the Year once, I think that's how it goes, or vice versa. But basically, he's an award-winning teacher, and he took the time to, in his 30 years, understand exactly what was so horribly wrong about schooling. And here he basically kind of summarized it to these seven special lessons. And I would say there's seven ways of destroying critical thinking. So first is confusion, basically. Nothing makes sense. You know, you have like English followed by math, followed by sports, followed by this, followed by that. It's nothing that's ever going to make sense ever again in anyone's life. You'll never live your life like that ever again. You will never, oh, I'm waking up. Oh, looks like we all go to homeroom, and looks like we all go over here, and now, you know, we study history, and now we're going outside for recess, and now we're going to go back to music? It wouldn't make any sense if you scheduled your life like that. You know, like, it's also not based on intrinsic scheduling. It's confusion. And the second lesson, is class position. Okay. That's basically, where are you in the position of the class? It's like teaching, you know, like, oh, you're in the popular group. Oh, actually, you're in the weirdo group. You guys are in the really, you know, like, I don't, chess club and bowling group, you know. you guys are in the freaks and geeks group. You guys, it's, the class position is definitely twisted. this a whole bunch of forced association is what happens in these government schools. So that's a problem. That is definitely one of them. But the next one after that is just indifference. There's nothing like the incredible apathy that is produced by children being forced to associate in these confusing like patterns of this. And by the way, I got to put this out there. If you're a parent and you put your children into a government school that you call public school, and I totally get it that you have to because you basically have had a child, but you don't really have the time and also the money to have both of you guys or one of you guys with the child pretty much in their formative years until they become an adult. And you also didn't budget the emotional intelligence and intellectual intelligence necessary to spend lots of time with a child and help them become an adult. If you lacked all of those things, those resources of financial, emotional, intellectual, and economic resources to be with your child, and therefore you put your child in a public school, I totally get it. You miscalculated. You needed to have that much to spend time with your child. So when we get back, I'm going to touch on some more of John Taylor Gatto's 7 lessons that he goes into. And I'll say that this is all for the purpose of freedom. Please keep that in mind. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.
Turns with this part of the show. Second to last segment, and it's been great to cover these tools of freedom tools, basically. And yeah, I am a tool for freedom. There are many ways to just increase the ability to have more choices, and also the reduction of friction. Basically, it really comes down to knowing what your objectives are, you know, having a life that's filled with meaning and purpose. So I was starting to cover John Taylor Gatto's 7 lesson school teacher, because basically he took some time to really look over his 30 years. And these are the lessons he taught. And I first covered confusion, the confusion of how everything is just a hodgepodge of it doesn't really lead to making sense. They don't really show a lot of the practical applications in schools that of actually being an adult. They really don't. That's really not at all part of what is covered in government schools. What every single person who comes out at age 18, whatever, from high schools, suddenly finds out that there's all these things. Maybe after college or however long they prolong their childhood, they come out to realize how much they actually really, really wish they did learn. So that's the confusing part, the class position part. I just covered that. That's where, you know, understanding all the cliques that are formed with forced association, just like in prison, in the military, and in government schools. Those are the three places that are basically where people are confined and forced to associate with people that they would never otherwise choose to associate with. Never everywhere, anywhere else do all of the same age group of anyone actually hang out. It's always a mixed age group thing. except in, of course, these classrooms. So the third lesson is indifference. They teach a form of apathy that's philosophical apathy, an apathy where there's really a resistance to self-reflection and self-analysis, because certainly there's no one modeling such behavior. Certainly the teachers are not, because they can say to do one thing but then demonstrate doing another by, you know, virtue of, you know, saying that you're not allowed to get frustrated and be violent, but then demonstrating being frustrated and sometimes violent. Certainly being aggressive. So, you know, do as I say, not as I do, that type of thing. And just this whole thing with the confusion, class position, it creates apathy, a philosophical apathy, and a type of, eventually, a political apathy. I mean, that's kind of important to understand. It just grows on people. And the fourth is a lesson called emotional dependency. This is where, again, it's that type of punished and rewards kind of thing, this consistency of labeling oneself and everyone else, of thinking in deserve-oriented terms, of denying responsibility for your emotional feelings. And that's basically looking for, like, emotional, like, pleasure from outside. This is, of course, what begins why people would start to take various chemicals to alter their emotional terrain. That's why. It starts there as a child, when they're forced to be in these situations and shown behavior of people who just go ahead and, basically abuse themselves and then succumb to everything. You know, even sports, certainly movies and like watching lots of video and such, and lots of drugs, of course. There's all these forms of hiding, showing the emotional dependency. The fifth lesson is intellectual dependency. This is part of what I call the addiction to being certain. This is where everyone really desires that they have to be certain on conclusions. Like, as if I had to be certain whether Sasquatch is real or man-made, you know, like, or just like completely a fabricated story that just is used to fool people. And very fanciful, and makes a lot of movies and books and things. I'm not addicted to certainty, so I'm not really in that little camp as much, but there are still components, you know, each of these terms can be broken down, but there are ways that people are intellectually dependent, especially being the compulsion, I like to use that word instead of addiction, a compelling feeling, a habit of being intellectually dependent on certain sources, saying, I trust those scientific experts, so-called, I trust those people, I don't trust those people or pretty much anyone else, that kind of thing. That's an intellectual dependency. The sixth lesson is provisional self-esteem. And this is that type of thing where the external world is used to, you know, extrinsic motivations are used to see how you feel good about yourself. I like to say this. I like to personally build my self-esteem on finding out what is right. And that could include certainly discovering where I'm wrong. Such as, was I wrong to make this kind of Freedom Fiends show for you guys listening? And, you know, I'm going to get a talking to maybe eventually after this show. But I don't really know if I'm wrong. I know that right now, though, I'm confident that I'm going to go ahead so, because I build my self-esteem on finding out if I'm right, and especially if I'm wrong, because I learn from that. Well, provisional self-esteem is you have self-esteem based on being right. That's like you raise your hand and you've got the right answer in class, and then the teacher beams at you and maybe certain people smile, you know, in the class, and that's provisional self-esteem. And if you say the wrong answer or the answer the teacher does not agree with, they could say you're wrong or some type of thing, or laugh at you, and other people could laugh at you. And if you build your self-esteem on being right in other people's eyes instead of basically finding out what is right and based on evidence and your empirical systems, well, those are two different things. So provisional self-esteem is a problem. And the seventh lesson is that no one can hide. One cannot hide. And that is something that's shown in all government schools that are known by you guys as public schools. It's just out there, basically. If you are a child in those schools, if you remember being back then, and certainly nowadays, everyone is under surveillance 24/7 the whole time from the moment that everyone gets there, every child that gets there. There's no privacy. There's no respect of one's autonomy. And internal volition. Like, yeah, I'm choosing to go off to my own private sector over here because I've got some projects to do and I really don't wish to be disturbed because this is going to take me 2.5 hours at least. You know, like, I've got a website to design. You know, a child doesn't have the space in a government school to do that. And I'm sorry if you don't like me calling it government schools. That's what it is, okay? And if you have your children in these places right now, trust me with this little bit of the fire that you hear in my voice right now. Trust me, I understand miscalculations in life. I didn't calculate certain things, and because of it, I'd say I'm far less wealthy, and I've spent a lot of time recouping those losses, okay? Trust me, I understand miscalculating. If you are a parent out there, I want to cover this very clearly. If you have had a child and you still are with the person that you had a child with, and you suddenly you notice, if I'm asking you, say, look at your position right now, and you don't have the time, the actual time, because you have to go to work and you cannot have your child there at work, or you do not want to have them there. And say if you also don't have the money. Even if you wanted to, you're going to a place, but if you don't really have the money to be with your child, but you'd rather do that anyway, you'd rather be the one staying at home with the child, but you're going to that place anyways. Well, okay, so that was a miscalculation. And how about if you don't have the intellect to be able to show the child a life that makes sense and to give to them a pathway that is actually practical and can be demonstrated to be, you know, give you a predicted and desired result to lead you from being a child to an adult in a calm and swift, though not necessarily rushed, kind of way, you know, somewhere between age 12 and 18, that's kind of where you can achieve adulthood, basically, in terms of skill sets, according to, like, what's happened with technology nowadays, with how much you can learn by age 12. It's kind of amazing. I mean, on the internet right now, like, this is what I'm saying. The opportunities are rather vast right now. So, if you didn't have the emotional abilities, the emotional skills to balance yourself, children are volatile. They're not born with emotional skills that are perfect, but they are actually functional. Let me explain. Okay, I am a parent, so I did spend some serious time with my child when she was in her formative years, you know, before she was age 11. I spent a lot of time with her. And I can say this much from my observations. She authentically had her feelings fully without ever holding it back like I would and many adults would in order to save face or like be strong or put up a show. She never had to do that as a little child nearly, and the emotion would flow all the way through her, and assuming she had luckily what she needed, you know, some support, she'd be done with it. The feelings were done. Whatever it was, whether it was anger or fear or sadness, it was rather quickly flowing through her. And certainly happiness, too. That feeling as well. Those are the four core feelings, by the way, from my research. So what I'm saying is people have these things like that, and they were damaged by going to schools because I was damaged by going to schools. And I did prevent my daughter from going to too much of that. Like, she only had a few years of some of those kinds of things at first, and then a span of not that. And then she, you know, chose to go back to a different kind of high school, a kind of like, you know, definitely more of a closer to a private school, but still a charter. So what I'm saying is there are things that happen when you're damaged like that, when your critical thinking is damaged, when you have forced to associate with people that you would never in any other part of your life wish to choose to do so. And if you're a parent right now and you don't have the financial and time and intellectual and emotional ability to spend all that time with your child to guide them from child to an adult, which I'm not going to say is your obligation, I'm going to say it is your opportunity. Well, this is a moment now. You hear my voice and you heard my words, and if you don't want to choose to forget it, you can choose right now to do something which is called step up. And you can actually provide to them the opportunity to show them, demonstrate to them a life that makes sense, show to your child that you can actually give them way more time and resources, give them the intellectual skill set that you can demonstrate to them, which I, the whole show, I've given you some tools how to do that, and show them an emotional way of reducing friction by knowing the four D's of demands and unrequested diagnoses, deserve-oriented language, and denial of responsibility. Show them that you remember to think in terms of grammar and logic and rhetoric, that knowledge, understanding, and then wisdom, or practical applications of knowledge and understanding. Show them that you have a practical application of critical thinking that you can demonstrate right now. Show them that you have power, and show them that how to become a functional adult in this 21st century world with these specific tools out there, these tools of freedom. That's what I'm asking for you to do, and that's going to touch on the redemption in the third act, which is coming up soon. That was my impassioned speech for you. It's okay that you miscalculated not enough time, and, you know,
you're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from The Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agrist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agrist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
Welcome back to the final segment of Freedom Fiends. It's a beautiful February night over here on the Big Island of Hawaii. I am less than a football field away from the edge of the ocean, and it's really, really nice to be on the show. I have spent this entire couple hours for me, by the way, not including commercial breaks, covering all these components. You know, touching on the first part of the Freedom Fiends name, freedom. What exactly it means to me, and that means boundaries, ownership, and property. And then, and where it goes to, which is, you know, eventually, hopefully, to reduce thinking and talking and actions that reduce choice and create scarcity, and to increase the types of effective results that are desired, you know, creating predicted and desired results, basically. Predicted and desired results, just to enunciate that. So here's the thing. This is, for me, my personal story, last segment, a little bit of redemption, okay? I have been professionally practicing holistic healthcare medicine for 20 years. I started as an apprentice 20 years ago. It's actually that long now. And that was my path, basically. I started with learning how to try to repair my own body, and that got me to find someone who, to help me, you know, effectively help, you know, get me healthcare. And that guy became my teacher. And then he sent me off to Oriental Medical College. That's where you become an acupuncturist, etc. And then, you know, from there, I did the usual thing to get all of these paperworks in order, you know, to do that kind of stuff. So first, I studied the body and all aspects of the body, meaning from the subtle bioenergetic. You know, you can attach DC millivolt meters all over the place and see other types of spectrum changes, to the biochemistry, which is obviously and, you know, empirically demonstrable. Also, the structure of the body is also demonstrable. And yeah, that's kind of the stuff the first I looked at. I moved here and I really found a new tool for my mind. I found an explicit method of critical thinking. It's some, you can look it up as the critical method of the trivium method of critical thinking. It's, but anyway, it's just a way of organizing and becoming more effective. And then I found a way to organize my feelings. And some of that included the work of Marshall Rosenberg, who covers, you know, things including the four D's of disconnected communication I just gave, and in terms of what he called nonviolent communication. But I was actually, you know, describing some components of that tonight, so that's the way it goes. I found a way to sort of balance that, and I also do some work with, you know, groups of people who support each other over here, and I learned other tools that help creating balance with my feelings, my emotional terrain. And then next, I found people who are good at getting really, really set up and more effective with their time. I've got mentors who are really good at a system called Getting Things Done by David Allen. You can look that up, you guys. It's really awesome stuff. It makes productivity, it creates better predicted and desired results. It just adds to what I'm saying. And then, you know, I'm learning more about business funnels and marketing and creating more effective businesses that I try to run. And all this is like an upsweep, you know, from knowing myself, from knowing my motives and what motivates me, from understanding the qualities that I'm after, that I've built over a lifetime of qualities that I desire. I get to figure out what exactly I want. And this has helped me use these tools. And tonight, I hope you like the tools. You know, I mean, this is the part where I'd be thanking whoever is my co-host for being there for me. And, you know, really, like in the case of Michael, honestly, how about pulling all the way to the show? How about... I'm just saying, hey, it's awesome doing a show with you, Michael. And it's great with, you know, doing a show with everyone else, by the way. It's really been a pleasure. Thank you, creators of Cell 411, the excellent app for my phone. Thank you, everyone. GCN Network. Thank you, Liberty Radio Network. Thank you to Bill Fouche and all the other places that have radio stations that broadcast this. How about thanks to all the truckers who are driving a truck right now. Thank you for your service, for creating, making it so that products get everywhere. Got truckers over here on this big island, by the way. Thank you to all the old guys who are fixing their Chevys in their garage late at night, and this is what you do, and instead of having a problem with your insomnia, you're actually getting her done. So thank you for your service in that way. Thank you to the awesome board op of GCN. This is my gratitude moment. The tools of freedom are out there, everyone. That's the redemption I give you. You can find them and seize them yourself. And I'm really psyched if you do so. And honestly, the younger people, they're doing it now. They inspire me. It's really great to be your fiend out there, Hawaiian Hodler.